We are holding on Pezayin Amud Aleph by the second Mishnah at the bottom of the Amud. Mishnah says, Dam shenis arav b'mayim, if you have blood from a chayah or an oif, which is supposed to be covered, which got mixed up with water, do you have to do kisei adam? So it depends. Im yesh b'maris dam, if it still has the appearance of blood, chayah v'chasas, then you still have to do kisei adam. If not, then it's the equivalent of what we learned yesterday about, for example, if it got covered up by the wind.
Like a bit of a mixer?
Well, sort of the opposite. They are, if the blood changes the color of it, then it's no good. Right.
It looks like water.
Right, yeah. If you have enough water, then it's not going to be. And it's out of the yayin, and what happens if the blood got mixed with wine, where then you can't really tell so easily whether it would still look like blood or not. So you consider how diluted would the blood be if this amount of wine was an equivalent amount of water, and then you go on the same basis. If it's enough, if it would have been enough to dilute it as water, then you're also potter from Pia 3, if not, then not. And it's out of the Dama Behema. What about if this blood of the Chaya or the Oif gets mixed up with blood of a behema, which doesn't require tisbi adam, as we've been learning so far, or oib damachaya, or it gets mixed up with blood of a chaya, which Rashi explains means, what we mean is, a chaya, for example, blood that was taken out of a chaya by bloodletting, let's say, which is also not chayav in kisbi adam, because you only chayav in kisbi adam when you shecht it. Although Mepharshim say we can also be talking about, let's say, a chaya tmeya, whatever it is. Again, royin oisakilahin mayim, same thing. We consider that blood as if it was water, and say the blood that doesn't require kisui, same idea. If there was enough of it that had it been water, it would have been enough to dilute this blood that does require kisui adam, then it doesn't, and if not, then it does. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein dam mevatel dam. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, in this last case, blood is not mevatel blood, so it doesn't matter how much other blood you have over there. The blood that of the chayah or the oif that fell in there is never bottle in it. Therefore, you're going to have to do kisei adam no matter what. Rabbi Yehuda holds in general min b'mino le bottle, that one thing is not bottle in the same min, which we're going to talk about later on in connection with the halacha of bottle b'cholav. We're going to talk about that topic of min b'mino, and we learned we talked about it in Zlachim also, that Rabbi Yehuda in general holds ein dam mevatel dam, and more generally that he says min b'mino le bottle. Right. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Dam hanitas, what about if you have blood that squirts away from the area where you're shechting? So we learned before, for example, it was a typical kind of thing to shecht it with in such a way that the blood will flow into a hole in the ground, because that way you don't have a huge puddle of blood to clean up. You just have one defined area, one hole, where then you can cover the blood and have that with it. So that nitas means like it squishes out, some of it out gushes, whatever you want to call it, but the point is some of it lands outside the hole. V'sha'alasakin, or blood that remains on the knife, chayav l'chasas, you have to cover that as well. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, emasai, so Rabbi Yehuda says, not necessarily, when would that apply? Bizman she'en sham dam, only when there's no other, bizman she'en sham dam elohu, only when there's no other blood. So let's say, for example, it happened, Yeshechter Chaya, let's say, most of the blood landed in a pool of water where now, as we said before, now you had enough water over there to be mevatel the appearance of it, therefore you don't do kisei adam with it. You have a little bit of blood, the only blood you have available now is the blood that didn't land in that pool, the damanikas, or the blood that's left on the knife, then you have to do kisei adam with that. And if it was on, otherwise not. Otherwise, avo yesh sham dam shaloihu. But Rabbi Yehuda says if you have other blood that you could do kisei adam with, possum alachas. Exactly that. In other words, you shechted the bird, let's say. You have most of the blood landed in the hole where you expected it to. Some of it squirted out elsewhere. Some of it still remained on the knife. Rabbi Yehuda says you don't have to cover that blood necessarily because
the one that's outside.
Yeah, because you cover the blood that's in the area where you expected it to land. In the hole, and that's good enough. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you don't have to cover all of the blood necessarily. You have to cover a substantial amount of the blood. You don't necessarily have to cover all of it. We'll discuss that in the Gemara, different opinions on that subject, whether you have to cover all of it.
The Torah
just says, the Shachas Dama, if it's Elba, it doesn't necessarily mean. We're going to see in the Gemara the various possibilities of what Dama can be. And by the way, there is a usual rule that when Rabbi Yehuda says in a Mishnah, Emasai, when the Tanakhama says something, and Rabbi Yehuda says, when does this apply? Generally speaking, that means that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing, he's clarifying. In other words, not necessarily would the Tanakhama of our Mishnah disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. when there, even when the Tanna Kamma says that you have to cover the blood that's on the knife or whatever, it may also mean, as Rabbi Huda is saying, that only affects the only blood that's available to cover. So we'll see in the Gemara. We have a couple of opinions on the subject. Okay. So, talking about this matter of blood getting diluted in water and therefore not looking like water anymore. So let's talk about some other let's talk about some other dinim that relate to that, and then see how that relates to our case over here. Tnan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah. We learned this in Zvachim. Dam shenis arav b'mayim. If blood of a korban was mixed up with water, same idea. Im yesh bei maris dam kosher. If it still looks like blood, then it's kosher to sprinkle on the mizbeach. It's arav b'yayin. Again, same as in our Mishnah. If it was mixed up with wine, royin osekilu mayim. And the same idea. You consider the wine as though it was water, and see if that would have been enough water to dilute it, so it doesn't look like blood anymore. It's arav b'dam behema, b'dam achaya. If it got mixed up with other blood of a behema of chulin, or with blood of a chaya, which is always chulin, because a chaya is never a carbon. Again, royin osekilu mayim. You consider it as though it was water. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein dam mevatel dam, and again Rabbi Yehuda says there, like he says over here, that blood is not mevatel blood, and therefore it doesn't matter how much other blood you have, you can use that blood for zirka, and in our Mishnah he says that you would have to do kisei dam. Omer Rav Chiya ba'aba, Omer Rav Yechanan, lo shonu ela shenofu mayim mosech dam. Now this whole discussion over here is only when water fell into the blood. So you had a basin or a hole in the ground or whatever full of blood, and therefore water fell into it. So therefore the water, as each bit of water falls in, it's bottled. So as long as the whole mixture still looks like blood, then it's still considered blood. Before it was the other way around, if you had a container full of water over there and the blood started falling into there, then it wouldn't even matter that's what we're saying. As far as sprinkling on the mizbeach, if the blood falls into the water, what will happen is rishon bottle. As the blood falls in, as each drop of blood falls in, it becomes bottle. Because when one drop falls in, for example, it's obviously diluted in the water. It doesn't look like blood anymore. Even though you have another drop falls in and another one, and eventually the whole mixture ends up looking like blood, it doesn't matter. As far as zrika, that doesn't work. It'll still be possible for zrika.
When the blood falls into the water,
because as the blood is falling in, it's becoming bottle. Now you have a concept called chozer veneer. You have a concept that sometimes you can have something which is bottle, but then when you have more of the same substance added to the mixture, again, we're going to talk about this in connection with bottle b'cholov, it comes up in Hilchos Pesach, it comes up in many places. Sometimes we say chozer veneer, that like it wakes up again, and we combine together what fell in there originally with what's falling in there now. Rav Chiya Ba'aba is telling us that when it comes to sprinkling it on the mizbeach, it's not so. We don't say chozer veneer. We're going to say in a second, kisei adam is different. But as far as zrika, once it's possible, it's possible. In general, we have the concept of dichui. We mentioned it the other day in connection with things of korbanos. You can have something that was meant to be used for a korban as long as it wasn't a living animal. There we have a different machlokas whether dichui applies to living animals. But here we're not talking. Here we're talking blood. So once it's nidche, once it's pushed off from being usable for the korban, then that's it. It became possible, and therefore it's not nira again. It can't be made fit again. That's what we're going to say. Amar apopo, l'inin kisui enakei. Now, that would not be the case with kisui adam. If the blood... Well, Rapapa is saying this. Let's see. One second. We don't see anybody disagreeing with Rapapa. So, Rapapa is So, Rapapa is saying, as far as kisui, it's not like that. Because we have a general rule that things for a mitzvah cannot be nidcha, even though temporarily, just like we said before about the blood that got covered up, that the wind blew dirt over it. So right now it's nidcha, because you can't do kisei adam with it once it's already covered with dirt. However, eventually when the wind blows away the dirt, then you have to do kisei adam again, because what it means is temporarily it was suspended from being able to do the mitzvah, but now it's available again for that purpose. The same thing would be true as far, the same thing would be true over here as far as Kisli Adam. The same thing would be true that the blood was temporarily unavailable for Kisli Adam because it fell into a lot more water and became bottle. But once you have more blood falling in there, and eventually the whole mixture looks like blood again, Choyzevanir, it wakes up again, and therefore we consider it to be blood again and available for the mitzvah. Never mind, Tanakhama, this is everybody is saying.
Rabbi Yehuda
said, Ein dam levatel dam. That was a special case.
But water can be levatel dam.
Yeah, water can be levatel dam, according to him, sure. Yeah. Because it doesn't look like blood anymore, but yeah. Okay. So that's that then. So when it comes to Kisli Adam, we say that Ein Dichri Yetz HaMitzvah. Now, of course, Zrika of a Korban is also a mitzvah, but the difference is there we're talking about that the Korban itself by that time has become possible. So once it became possible, you can't make it kosher again. Whereas here we're talking about it wasn't possible for the mitzvah per se, it just wasn't available for the mitzvah, and now it is. Okay. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kol Mare Admumis, Whenever you have a red color from the blood, mechafrin, in other words, we have to define when we say that it looks like blood, how much does it have to look like blood? How does it have to be a deep red like blood, or does it have to just be that it still has a reddish tinge? So Rabbi Yehuda is telling us in the name of Shmuel that whenever you have a reddish color over there, a reddish tinge, mechafrin, you can still use it for kapara to sprinkle on the mezeach. Umachshirin, you can also use it for hechsher. It's also considered blood as far as it's one of the shiva mashkim, that if food becomes wet with it, it'll be susceptible to tumah. That's machshirin. V'chayovin v'kisui, and as long as there's a reddish tinge, then if it was blood from a chayah or an oif, then you're chayiv in kisui adam. So the question is, my kamash malan, what exactly is Shmuel's chiddush? On the face of it, mechafrin tanena, we learned in a Mishnah already about kapara, chayavim v'kisei tanena, and we learned about kisei adam, because we already said that if you have maris dam, if you have an appearance of blood, then you can sprinkle on the mezbeach, and then it requires kisei adam, and if not, then not. So we already know that it means that as long as it still has the red color of blood.
So what's the chiddush?
That's the question, what's the chiddush? The answer is machshirin, yes, but the chiddush that Shmuel wants to tell us is as far, that it also works as far as the dinim of being machshel lekabel truma.
That we didn't learn.
That we wouldn't have, because we didn't have a mishnah about it. But the question still becomes machshirin nami. Okay, but as far as machshirin also, either way, of course it's gonna be machshel lekabel truma. I da machshuri machshir, I may achshuri machshiri. We know that both blood and water are two of the shiva mashkim. So each one. That's the point. Each one of them individually is able to be machshel lekabel tumah. So what's the difference? If it looks like blood, then it's able to be machshel lekabel tumah on the grounds that it's blood. If it doesn't look like blood anymore, it's able to be machshel lekabel tumah on the grounds that it's water. So what's the difference? Why do we need to be told? Yeah, why do we need to be told that only if it has the reddish color?
No.
The answer is, loy tzricha shetimdei b'meg shom. Yes, but the chiddush that we need to be told is, suppose that it was mixed with rainwater. Now, the whole concept of being machshel lekabel tumah is you have a basic concept over there, which Rashi quotes over here from the first Mishnah in Machshirin, that it has to be the mashke, the liquid that we're talking about over here has to be l'rotza, and it has to be that water got onto the food, the rotza, in a way that you wanted it to happen. There's all kinds of cases. The whole Masechta Machshirin is about various topics like that. You have cases where... Well, the point is, you have two parts of intent. You have what's called Tchilosei L'Rotzen and Sofei L'Rotzen. Tchilosei L'Rotzen meaning, in other words, that when the water was detached from its original place, wherever it was, let's say it was whether it was rainwater, whether it was water drawn from a well or what have you, that there was intent to remove it from there. And also that you have that later on, there was intent for it to fall on this particular food or for this food to get wet with it. And you have a whole bunch of complicated dinim that result of that. Sometimes you can have food becomes wet and yet it's not mokshul kabel tumah. So therefore, you have all kinds of cases. You have cases, for example, let me think of one that you have in the Mishnayos over there. You have, let's say, a person bent over to take a drink and some water got on their nose. If later on that water falls on fruit, it won't be machshel lekabel tumah because he had no intention for it to get on his nose, and it's not a necessary thing. It's not inevitable when you drink that it's going to get on your nose. And the same thing as far as the other. You can have, for example, a person, I think you have a case over there where a person hides, where a person has to hide fruit, and the only place they can find to hide it is in the local river or whatever. Same thing. It's not moksha l'kabel truma because they didn't want for it to get wet. They would have rather not had to hide it, basically. Something like that.
Rain that can...
So but that's the point. So that's why we're mentioning over here make shomim because there's no rostrum over there because the rain just falls. Well, that's what the Gemara is going to ask. One second. So that's the question. So to Tinder, the Meg Shomim, we're talking about where the blood was mixed with Meg Shomim. By the way, the word Kemed usually means, the word Shatimda, I mean that you made Kemed. The usual word, can I explain? The word Kemed usually means, we've had it many times before, it comes up many places in Shas, it means when you take the dregs and whatever that are left after pressing grapes to make grape juice, which eventually turns into wine, you have the dregs left, you have all that sort of thing, and then you pour water over it, and over time the water absorbs the color and the flavor and whatever of the residue that's left in there, of the residue over there, and it's called temed. It's like an inferior kind of wine. So you usually wouldn't apply the word temed when you're talking about a mixture of blood. The Gemara is actually borrowing this expression from a similar discussion in Bava Basra, where there it is talking about temed that was made in a similar way, where you left a barrel with dregs in it out in the open and rain fell into it. So here the Gemara is borrowing that for a similar expression. Okay, the question though becomes made shomim nami. Okay, so even if there's rainwater mixed in it, so what? Given the shock of the rami, the Gemara is assuming that what it means is that rainwater fell into a keli, then a person took from that keli where it fell into and poured it into the keli where the blood is. Achshavinu. Well, then by doing that, he's obviously showing that he considers that he wants that water to be in the second keli. So what's the difference, whether it was rainwater or not? Either way, if you still have enough blood in the mixture for it to look red, then it would be maksha on the grounds of still being blood. And if not, then it's maksha on the grounds of it being water where there was rusting.
One second. He may have had intent only for the water and not for the blood.
Once he takes the water and pours it into the container with the blood, obviously he means for it to be in there. There's rotzen. So now that water is lerotzen. It was moved from its original place, lerotzen. Now it's machshel. That's what we're talking about, the water. So that's the point. If you still have enough percentage of the mixture is blood that it still looks red, then it's machshel kabel truma because it's still blood. And if you have, there's so much water that the blood is not visible anymore and the whole thing just looks like water, fine, the water is also machshel kabel truma. So even if it started 50-50, obviously it's still going to look like blood. Come on.
So if he doesn't have the intent?
If he's taking from one keli and pouring into another, obviously he has intent. The answer is, lo tzricha shenitmadu me'elehem. Yes, but the chiddush would be, what if it fell in on its own? In other words, he left a container with blood in it outside, and rain fell into it, so there was no rotten over there. He didn't necessarily leave the container out intending for rain to fall. There's other gemaras in other places that talk about for certain purposes, and halacha, it depends, not necessarily as far as the halachas of being machshel kabel truma. For example, as far as the halachas of mikvahs, it makes a difference whether he knew it was going to rain or not, whatever the point is. Well, that's the point. In other words, you could have, he put it out there when it was sunny, and then it was still out there when it rained. The point being, in other words, that, so therefore, there's no rotten over there. So that's the chiddush. That's where Shmuel needs to be telling us. In that case, given that there was no rotzen, this water therefore is not being machshel kabel truma because there was no rotzen in it. Therefore, if you have enough of it to cancel out the look of the blood, if it doesn't look red anymore, then indeed it's not going to be machshel kabel truma. Aye, it's water, but it's not water that's rotzen. Whereas if there was not enough water to dilute the blood so totally, then yes, it'll be machshel kabel truma because it still looks like blood. That was his point. Okay. So that's all one explanation of the chiddush in Shmuel's state. Another explanation, Rav Asi Minahar Biloimer, Bitzlalta, whatever, Dedama, that we're not necessarily talking about whole blood. We're talking about the plasma that comes out when blood congeals, then you have liquid pools around it. It's the blood plasma. You have your red blood cells and white blood cells and platelets or whatever that are in the blood. And then you have the liquid that all of those are carried in around the body, which is more or less water. And it's not more or less. It has various substances in it, but to our eyes, it looks more or less like water. So therefore, the point is, that's what Shmuel is saying. If it looks still reddish, then it'll be considered blood as far as being machshel lekabel truma. If it's pure plasma and therefore it doesn't have any red color in it, then it won't be machshel lekabel truma. Because either way, it's not, it can't be considered blood anymore because it doesn't look like blood. It can't be considered water because the fact of the matter is it's not water. It's something that exuded out of the blood. Therefore, that's Shmuel's point that it has to look reddish in order for it to be machshel lekabel truma. But never mind the case. So aside from the case that the Sama de Gemara explained that we're talking about where it got diluted with rainwater, you can have another case that Shmuel is talking about over here where you have just blood plasma. Is it machshel lekabel truma or not? Depends whether it looks reddish. That's what I'm saying. You can still, okay, so if you still have enough red blood cells in it that it looks red, then it's still machshel lekabel truma. If not, then not. That's the point. Okay. Rabbi Yirmiyah Medifti says, here's something else. Since we're mentioning this blood plasma, the flauta, by the way, is from the word soul. It means the clear part of the blood. So, Rabbi Yirmiyah Medifti, onush kore, if a person were to eat or drink, whatever, such plasma from an animal, then he would be chayav kares, just like the regular case of a person eats blood, where he's chayav kares, v'hud de'ika kezayis, provided that there is a kezayis. Now, what do we mean, provided that there's a kezayis? So here you have a few explanations. Rashi says it means in order for the person to be chayav kares, there would have to be a kezayis of regular blood, regular blood that looks red, in other words. And then aside from that, you have this plasma, you have this flel to the dama. Then the person would be chayav kares. In other words, the point is, according to Rashi and the way Tosfos explains Rashi, yes, it would mean, in other words, that even though the plasma itself comes from the blood, the person wouldn't be chayav kares for eating it unless you actually have a kezayis there that actually is dam gomer, that's complete blood. Mm-hmm. And Tosfos points out, if it was diluted with rainwater, obviously you need a kezayis or revius, as the case may be, because obviously the rainwater doesn't combine together with it. You have a number of other explanations among Rishonim and Achronim, what it means over here, v'hudi ikka kezayis. The Ritva talks about, for example, let's say you have, similar to Rashi, but a somewhat different thing. Let's say you had a kezayis of regular blood that was diluted, let's say, in a large amount of plasma. Enough that, and the plasma, let's say, was fairly pure, it was yellowish-green, as you said, then there's enough of it to dilute the blood so it doesn't look like blood anymore. And not only that it doesn't look like blood anymore, more to the point is the Ritva says, you don't have kezayis b'chdeachilis pras. You don't have of the original blood. You don't have enough in the mixture. You don't have one eighth. The actual blood is less than one eighth of the mixture. So if you were to eat a pras of it, you wouldn't even be eating a kezayis of the blood. Nevertheless, the Ritva says the point that Rabbi Yirmiyah wants to tell us is nevertheless the person is going to be chayav kares on the grounds that since the plasma did after all come originally from blood, you can't say that it should be mevatel the other blood that got mixed into it. Somewhat similar to Rabbi Yehuda's Ein Dam Mevatel Dam, but a little bit of a different idea here. I mean, if it was part of the original blood, then sure, a person would be chayav kares for eating it. It's not like one blood that is chayav kares and one that's not. The point is that it's not bottle, even though the actual visible blood is a very small amount of the mixture. That's how the Ritva explains our Gemara.
So he considered plasma with tiny amounts of blood.
With a tiny amount of blood, would still be considered blood, and as long as there was a kezayis of actual blood in there originally, then he'd be chayav. Then he would be chayav kares for eating it. Mm-hmm. You have other explanations. The Chassam Sofer brings in one of his Trovas an explanation that it means that if you have enough plasma, that if it congeals, you would have a piece the size of a kezayis, then a person is chayav kares for eating that. Okay. And then the Torah Chaim explains based on what the Rambam says that what it means is we're still on this idea of a little bit of a reddish tinge. If this plasma has any reddish tinge to it still, then it would be considered just like regular blood, and therefore a person would be chayav kares for eating it just as if it was regular blood.
And if you mix, let's say, plasma from one animal which is chayav, with plasma an animal that's not chayav.
There's no such thing. When it comes to eating blood, a person is chayav kares for eating blood from an animal. We're not talking about kisya dam, we're talking about kares. Okay, so then the pashtos, at least according to the Ritva, it wouldn't, because again, ain't dam. Oh, no, so it would be like we said in the Mishnah. The Tanakhama would say, roya noisem kile in mayin, that you'd have to see whether the one that's potter from kisya dam is enough that had it been regular water, it would have been mevatel, the appearance of this blood. And Rabbi Huda says, ain't dam mevatel dam. In a braisa, we learn, here's another din, as far as this plasma, as far as this flow to the Dhamma, such blood would be, if it came from a human being, would be metame ba'oil, again, as long as it has this reddish tinge. There you would have to have a revius of it. Again, according to Rashi, it means if you have a revius of regular blood, and that then and you also have some of this plasma, then they would combine together, basically. Okay. So now we learn in a Mishnah. Tosis points out it's actually a Braisa. So it's one of those things. Once in a while, the Gemara will quote something beginning with Tznan, when really it's not a Mishnah, really it's a Braisa. Anyway, Tol Mashka Hames Tehorin, the Mishnah or the Braisa says, any liquids that come out of a dead human being, so such things Tehorin. Are tahor, they're not metame. And Rashi gives examples. Let's say, for example, tears from his eyes or milk from a woman or whatever. No, well, it's not anything. We're going to talk about soon, actually. We're going to talk about soon that there are actually different kinds of liquids that come out of the body which have different dinim. You actually have, I think, nine different kinds of liquids that halacha defines, where some of them have tumah chamura, depending what kind of tome they came out of, a dead person versus a zav, etc. Some of them are metame tumah chamura, or metame strong tumah. Some of them are weaker tumah, and some of them not at all. So let me see. So the ones that Rashi mentions a little further in the sugya, you have. The ones that, for example, from a zov, you have the zov, the actual liquid that comes out of him that makes him a zov, the discharge, yeah. You have his saliva, and you have his urine. Those three are metame tumah chamura. Those three have essentially the same tumah as the zov himself.
Not his tears.
So, and Rashi explains, based on other Gemaras, that's what I'm saying, you have like nine different ones, and they come in like three different categories. You have ones that have the tumah chamura, that have the strong tumah. You have ones that have a weaker tumah, they're just like liquid that he touched. And then you have ones that are not considered, that are not metame at all in halacha. So,
ear discharge.
I don't remember what the whole list of nine is. But anyway, the point is, Rashi mentions, based on other Gemaras, what it is in order for them to be in the first category of Tumah Chamura, they have to be something that they collect Mis'agel V'yotze, it's called, they collect together in a collection, and then they come out. So saliva is like that, for example. Mis'agel literally means like it becomes a round bowl, sort of. So like saliva, for example, it doesn't just dribble out. You collect a certain amount of it in your mouth, and then you can spit out a gob of it. And the same thing with the other things. Okay. Anyway, so when we say kol mashka hames, we mean, for example, Rashi says ones that are in the second category. Let's say, for example, like tears and like milk and whatever. So those things are tahorin, chutz midama, except for blood that comes out of a person after they died. B'chol mare ad mumis, which that would be tamei. B'chol mare ad mumis shvoy metamin ba'oil. Anything that has a reddish tinge, the slough of the dhamma that we just said, that even if you only have plasma coming out, as long as it has a reddish tinge, meaning it's got enough red blood cells in it to look reddish, then it's also metamei, just like blood. Again, like we said before, as long as you have a revius of it, metamin ba'oil. They're metamei ba'oil if you're under the same roof as them, just like the actual mess himself. So that's what this braisa says, which is, by the way, also why Tosfos points out that it has to be a braisa rather than a mishnah, because if it was a mishnah, why did the Gemara bring it before as a proof? When we mentioned before, we said before, metamin ba'oihel, in the case of the plasma, we should have said, and you know, we have a proof for that from the mishnah. But if you have, it's another braisa, okay, so you have one braisa and then you have another braisa. The Gemara doesn't necessarily have to bring it as a proof, it can just bring it in order to discuss it. Which is what we're doing over here. So the question is, Mashka Mester Horin. So you're telling me that, for example, tears or milk that come out of a dead person is Tahor, is not Metame? Or a Minu, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah says, Mashka Tvulyoim, liquids of Tvulyoim, so the same kinds of liquids, in other words, let's say tears, of somebody who toiveled, but has not yet had, a head of Shemesh. So now the rule with Tvul Yoim, he still is somewhat Tomei. He still has a degree of Truma. But he can't eat Truma, that's true. First Mishnah and Brachas, indeed. He'll passel Truma if he touches it, and he certainly can't eat Kodshim. But there are certain kulos with him in particular. Usually you have midrabanan liquids, when they become tamei, usually become a rishon l'truma. And even when, we've had sugyas about this before, even when the thing that touched them, that made them tamei in the first place, is itself a lower degree of truma, such as a sheni, the liquids themselves will become a rishon. Usually you have on a daraisa level, at least truma always goes downward. A rishon begets a sheni, which begets a shlishi, etc. But here you have a sheni is able to cause something to become a rishon, to become a rishon, going up the ladder rather than down. Because the chum made such a gzera. So it's midrabanan. I'm sorry, I said midrabanan. But a tzvul yoim is an exception to that. So we're saying that a tzvul, so mashka tzvul yoim, so the liquid from a tzvul yoim, mashkin ayotim mimenu, namely the liquids that come out of him, again, we mean like tears or milk or whatever, tears, the three in this category, Tosfos quotes them over here actually, tears, milk, and blood from a wound. Those are the three in that second category. So that's what we're saying. So we're saying that if they're mashka mes, then they're not metame. And now we're saying if they're mashka tzvulyoim, kimashkin shinegeya behem, then they have the din of liquids that he touched, which Tosfos has a discussion of it over here and says we must mean necessarily, if a tzvulyoim touches liquids of chulin, nothing happens. The tzvulyoim himself is only a sheni l'truma. So any liquids that he touches are going to become a shlishi l'truma, and there's no shlishi l'truma by cholin. So necessarily, Tosfos says we must be talking about liquids of truma that he touched. So we're saying they're posel, so they're posel, but they're not metamel. So the same thing, his tears or whatever would have the same din. The elu ain metamin. Now, neither one of them, neither liquids that come out of Tzvulyoim's body, again, such as his tears, or liquids that he touched, neither of them are metame other things, even when we're talking about truma, for example, so they become a shlishi, but a shlishi, there's no revi by truma. Now, unlike when it comes to any other tame person, a zav, a person who was touched by a sheref, etc., bein kalin bein chamorin, whether we're talking a lesser degree of truma or a greater degree of truma, which we're going to discuss soon what greater and lesser means, mashkin ayotin mehen kemashkin agayin mehen, with them, the rule is also that the liquids that come out of them are like the liquids that they touch. But that means, in other words, that it means that in either case they're going to be a tchila, which is another name for rishon. Chutzman amashke shu avatuma, except for you have liquids that come out of a tumah, which are actually an avatuma. Namely, those are the three in the first category: the ziva, the saliva, and the urine. And also Rashi adds also the shichlat zera of any person, which is similar in that sense to zoiv. Those things, for example, those things that come out of a zoiv are themselves an avatuma. So in other words, what the Mishnah is telling us is, let's say, for example, with a zog, his saliva and his urine, etc., will be metame just like him. They are an avatoma. Other liquids that he touches, or also his tears or blood from a wound or milk, if we're talking a zava, will be a rishon l'truma d'rabbanan. And also liquids that they touch will be a rishon l'truma d'rabbanan. Now, when we say over here kalin and chamorin, on the face of it, that includes a mess. So what are you telling me that tears that come from a mess after he dies are tahor? When based on this Mishnah, it seems they're rishon l'truma. We just said they're like mashkin that he touches.
Kamashkin
shenogin b'hem. Right.
Shenogin b'hem.
Yeah. No. So we said by tvulyom it's like mashkin shenogin b'hem, which means they're only a shlishi. By any other tame, it sounds like we're saying that. They'll also be kamashkin hanegeya ben. And since if a mess touches liquid, he makes them a rishon l'truma, then therefore the same thing should be true of his tears. So what are you telling me that they're tahor? My kalin or my chamorin. So we have to ask, what do we mean in this Mishnah when it mentions that this rule is true of kalin and chamorin, of lesser trumas and more severe trumas? My lab, kalin, sheres vizav, v'chamorin mes. On the face of it, for this purpose, kalin means, for example, a person who became tamei by a sheres, or a person who became tamei by a zav, or maybe it means actually the sheres, it can mean the sheres itself, which are more lenient tumas, right? As opposed to v'chamorin mes, the harsher tuma would be the mes, because a mes is not just an avatuma, a mes is an aviyavoyta tuma. He's a mes is able to make someone that touches him an avat truma, which is unique among trumas. Most other trumas, the source of truma itself is an avat truma, and whatever touches it becomes a rishon the truma. The person touches a shadup, for example.
Unless he's the only one that's of the others.
Yeah. So therefore, that would mean that the mess is the chomer, and therefore, for example, tears or what have you that come out of him should be metame. There should be a rishon l'truma, like we just said, and you're telling me that they're tahor completely. The answer is loy. No.
It should be just 1 degree lower than the mess itself.
Well, on the face of it, it should be. Well, so what it is, right.
So avat truma.
It wouldn't be an avat truma. The only mashkin that are an avat truma are the three liquids that are the three liquids in the first category. Again, saliva, shichvat zera, or ziva, and urine, and also, okay, in the case of a mess, also blood, because blood is the dama nefesh, also fine. But so the blood itself actually would be an avi avos hatruma, same as the mess itself.
The blood of a mess would be
an avi avos hatruma, as long as they have a revius of it. The rest of the other three liquids that we're mentioning, the shichvat zera, the saliva, and the urine, would be a rishon l'truma on the face of it, because we're saying they would be like liquids that he touches. Mm-hmm. But you're telling me that they're completely tahor. Why is that?
Well, why should it be a rishon? It should be avatum.
And a mess makes people or kalim or whatever that he touches an avatum. I don't think there is such a thing as food or drinks that can be an avatum, although I'm not sure about that. But in any case, fine, at least a rishon l'truma. If not, maybe an avatum or whatever. The point is, in the braisa that we quoted before, we said they're tahor. What's the logic? Yeah. The answer is loy. No, because that's not the definition of kalin v'chamurin. That's what Mishnah means. Rather, kalin, sheretz, v'chamurin, zav. Kalin, for this purpose, means the sheretz. And Rashi says, for example, you could have, let's say, a dead sheretz. You have urine that was in the sheretz's bladder, and now it comes out afterwards. So that will have the din of liquid that the sheretz touched. Therefore, it'll be a rishon l'truma. It'll be a rishon l'truma. So it's not referring to a mess at all. It's only telling us about the distinction between a sheretz and a zav. So whether we're talking a sheretz or whether we're talking a zav, which has a stronger degree of truma, because a zav is able to be metame anything that he sits on or leans on or whatever, whereas a sheretz is not.
So kalin would be a sheretz.
So kalin would be a sheretz, chamurin would be a zav. But the Mishnah is not addressing a mess at all. In which case, in other words, it would come out that for that purpose, a mess would be more lenient than a sheretz or a zav. Even though on the one hand,
it's a charge.
Well, in other words, that's what we said, that the tears of a mess will not be metame. So the question is, Maishna mess de loy Maishna zav de gozru be'rabanan, Maishna mess de loy gozru be'rabanan. So what's the logic? Why would we say that when it comes to, again, the blood from a wound, the tears and milk, which are the three liquids in the second category, where we said that they're considered like the thing that the person touches, and that concept is only de'rabanan, that they're rishon l'truma. So why would we say by a zav the chachamim made such a gzera and said that his tears, etc., are metame, are rishon l'truma, and by a mess, why would they not have made such a gzera by a mess?
Seems just a
The answer is zav de lo gedili in shemine gozru be'rabanan. The answer is yes, but people don't keep away from a zav. First of all, a zav is alive. So, and first of all, a zav is a living person. Second of all, it's not obvious at first glance that a person is a zav. So therefore, so people don't know necessarily to stay away from him. That's the point. Therefore, the Chachamim had to make a gzera that people should make sure to stay far away from him, and therefore they to not touch, because if they're able to touch his tears and things don't become tame from that, they're going to think maybe the same thing applies also to his to his saliva and urine and whatever, which do. So therefore, the Chachamim found it necessary to make a gzera. Mess, dilly, in shemine, a mess anyway, people stay away from. It's obvious he's dead, and people know that he's dead, and that he's a strong source of trauma. Like us, you're very abundant, so that abundant didn't have a need to make a gzera to say that his tears, etc., should also be metamic.
But strictly midaraisa.
Midaraisa, none of them would be metamic. Midaraisa, we would say, of a zav, only the first three liquids, only saliva, shichvat zera, / ziva, and urine.
And urine.
Which those three, again, are misagol v'yotze. Those three are the ones that you have a gob of them formed, and then they're expelled, as opposed to the other one. Yeah.
The Rabbanan extended
that to the next three, which are his tears, blood from a wound, and a woman's milk. So that people should not get confused and will stay away from that. And then you have three other liquids, which I don't remember what they are. I think one of them I think is mucus from his nose, maybe from his ears also, I don't remember. One of them I think is like diarrhea or something. I forget what they are exactly. But whatever they are, there's three other things which are not metame at all, even from themselves. Okay. Fine. Okay.
Do we have any deems for spinal fluid?
No idea. I mean, I don't know, actually. Yeah. Okay. Then we said in the mission, Damanita Zashala Sakin Bechola, we said that the blood that squirts out of the area where you're shechting, or the blood that's on the knife, we said the Tanakama says you have to cover it, and Rabbi Yehuda says only if that's the only blood available. Otherwise, if you have other blood that's available to cover, then you don't have to cover that. So, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, Vichi Sahu, when the Pasuk says he should cover it, the blood, from there we learn that you have to cover the blood that spritzes out and the blood that's on the knife. Amr of Yehud.
The blood that's on the knife from the gushing?
No, the blood that's on the knife, just from the shita. Yeah. No, there are two different cases. Amr of Yehud Emesai, again, like in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehud says, when does that apply? Bizman she'enshem dam elahu, only when that's the only blood available. Avo yeshem dam shalayhu, but if you have other blood available, then you don't have to cover the blood. Then you don't have to cover the blood from that squirted out, or that was on the knife.
What do you mean, dumb that's available?
Dumb that's available. Exactly what we just said. In other words, if you shechted, and for example, you have the rest of the blood fell into a pit full of water and it became bottle. So then, the only blood you have available right now is the blood on the knife. So fine, you have to scrape it off the knife and put it on top of dirt and put dirt on top of it. But otherwise, you can just cover. Otherwise, you just have the blood that landed on the dirt that you had prepared in advance or whatever, the loose dirt that was there. You cover it with more loose dirt, and you're good. And you don't have to worry about the blood. You don't have to worry about the blood that's on the knife. Can you eat? Then we learn in another braisa, also on this topic, v'chisahu. The pasuk says that you should spill out the blood and you cover it. Melamed shekol damo chayv l'chasas. From there, we learn that you have to cover all the blood. Based on this, the Chachamim said that the blood that squirts out or the blood that is on the agapayim, you have to cover. Agapayim, Rashi explains, means the koisle beis hashchita, the walls of the beis hashchita. So you have meshechted the animal's neck, so you have the point where you cut, and then you have the rest of the neck that goes downward from there or upward, whatever, depending what position, the stump, yeah. So the blood that's on the outside of the stump, therefore the chum are saying you'd have to cover as well. Okay. So Reb Shimon Gamliel says, when would that apply? Only if you didn't cover the dama nefesh, and therefore, in other words, all you have is this blood that's on the agapayim. Avo kisa dama nefesh, but if you covered the dama nefesh, potter melechasid, then you're potter from covering the rest. So on the face of it, we have three opinions over here. We have the Chachamim, we have Rabbi Yehuda, and we have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which actually, though, a number of the Rishonim say, given that we had in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is not necessarily disagreeing with the Chachamim, he's just saying Emesai, and Emesai means that he's agreeing with them, he's just clarifying them, then not necessarily should we have to assume that over here you have three different opinions. So the Gemara is going to point out over here three different ways of learning, but you have many Rishonim learn that actually there's really only two opinions over here. You have Rabbi Yehuda clarifying the Tanakhama, and then you have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Another way of looking at it is that maybe you do have three opinions over here. Maybe this Tosfos mentions, maybe this rule that we say that whenever Rabbi Yehuda says Emesai, he's coming to explain, maybe that applies only in Mishnayos. Doesn't necessarily apply in Braisos. So when we have over here in Braisos, it might be different. Yeah, in Braisos, he may well be disputing. So therefore, even though he says over here, Emesai is Mansha in Shamdam, maybe then Rabbi Yehuda here is arguing with the Tanakhama, and we actually do have three opinions. So what is the underlying machlokes between these three opinions? Rabbanon savri domoi kol domoi. The Rabbanon say that when the Pasuk says that you've a shofach of domoi, you have to spill out its blood and cover. Its blood implies kol domoi, all its blood. Therefore, you have to get all of it, including what's on the sides of the neck and including what's on the knife, etc. Rabbi Yehuda son of domoi v'afilum mikzas domoi. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the word domoi can imply any part of the blood. So even if you only have a little bit, then so even if you only cover some of the blood, then it's good enough. So you don't have to scrape it off the knife if you have other blood to cover. It doesn't have to. Rabbi Yehuda says domo. It can imply after the mitzvah domo. Okay, Tosfos actually talks about over here. There's a Gemara in Bechoros where it seems the other way around, where Rabbi Yehuda says the word Bechor means Afilu Mikta, that the word Bechor means Kulei Bechor, and then Tosfos discusses.
Yeah,
no, that's Rabbi Yehuda himself is saying over there the word Bechor implies any kind of Bechor, and therefore you have a word Kol over there to mean any whatever. The point is, Tosfos explains that why it would be that Rabbi Yehuda over here, why over here he would say that domoi can mean mixed domoi. One thing is, Tosfos says, because since it says domoi, if it meant to say the whole thing, it could have just said dom. It could have said shakach is dom or hadom or whatever.
Yeah, by saying dom, it could be other animals together.
No. Just chiyot said chaya oi oi. If we already said the word oi means one or the other. So therefore, domoi, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, means any part of its blood. As long as it's blood, it can be any part of it. Whereas the Chachamim say it's called Domei, but Reb Shimon Gamliel says the word Domei implies the unique blood. In other words, it has to be Dam HaNefesh. Reb Shimon Gamliel had made the distinction that when do you not have to cover the blood that's on the stump of the neck or whatever, is when you covered the Dam HaNefesh. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say, as long as you covered any blood, doesn't matter whether it was Dam HaNefesh or not, as long as you covered some of the blood, you're potter from covering the rest. Reb Shimon Gamliel will say what you covered has to be dam hanefesh, and the Tanakhama will say that you have to cover everything. You have to cover everything, and therefore you don't even have to scrape off.
What's dam hanefesh exactly? No.
Dam hanefesh is the first spurt, the first gush that comes out after the shchita, where the animal's chayus is leaving with that. As we've learned about dam hanefesh before. That is.
We learned that we didn't say that the first amount of blood retention.
That's basically what it is. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
what
killed the animal is.
Yeah.
Dam
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. No, but it is, in other words, in other words, you have, when you first shecht an animal or a bird, you have a huge gush of blood comes out, and with that, the animal's chayus leaves with that. That's also the blood that you collect in the mizrach to sprinkle on the mizbeach, with the carbon. And then afterwards, you have dam hatamsis. You have blood trickles out afterwards. That's not dam hanefesh anymore. The animal's dead by that point. So that's the thing. According to the Tanakhama, yes. According to the Tanakhama, you have to cover all the blood over here.
According to
Rabbi Yehuda, you have to cover some blood, so it doesn't matter whether Dama Tamsis or Dama Nefesh, as long as you cover some blood, you're okay. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is insisting you have to cover Dama Nefesh, and if you didn't cover it, you weren't Yotze to the Mitzvah.
But if you wouldn't say Dama Tamsis, you have to.
No, he would say, once you covered the Dama Nefesh, then you're good. Yeah.
Dama Nefesh is from Dama Tamsis.
That's the point.
Yeah,
right.
That's the point.
In other words, yeah.
Okay.
Most of the Rishonim Paskin, like Rabbi Yehuda, especially given the point that in the Mishnah, at least, Rabbi Yehuda is not disagreeing with the Tanakhama, but just clarifying what he says. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's the halacha, is if you have other, it doesn't matter whether what you covered is a dam nefesh or not, as long as you covered some blood, then you're okay. You don't have to scrape off the knife, etc. If the only blood available is that, then yes, you have to scrape that off the knife or whatever and put it on loose dirt and cover it. Okay. Mishnah says,
How long does it have to be covered?
You have to scrape it off the knife. You have to put offer lamata over offer lamayla. We learned at the beginning of the parak that the dirt below and dirt above. Yeah. So you have to scrape it off the knife, put it on some loose dirt, and put more loose dirt on top of it. So now we're going to talk about what is considered dirt for this purpose. Bameh mechasin or bameh ein mechasin. What can you cover blood with, and what can't you cover blood with? So like this, mechasin bezevel hadak. You can cover with fine dung, like dung that comes out in small pieces, or maybe that was ground up or whatever, over choil hadak, also with fine sand, besid, or with lime, which is used to make plaster, over chausis, or with chausis. Rashi explains chausis is you take pottery and grind it up. That's called chausis, Rashi explains.
Is ground
pottery.
Earthen pottery?
Yeah, earthenware. You take pottery, you take earthenware, and you grind it up. Yeah. Tosfos argues on that because first of all, Tosfos actually brings from a Gemara in Baba Kama, where Rashi explains over there that chausis means ground up bricks. But over here, the next thing the Mishnah mentions is ground up bricks, so it can't mean that. Then Tosfos says, okay, over here Rashi is saying it means ground up earthenware, but the Gemara mentions ground up earthenware and ground up and chauses separately. So therefore, it must mean something else. So you have Rishonim, for example, the Ritva explains that chauses is actually a type of clay that's used for making cheres. You can't just make cheres, you can't just make earthenware out of any old kind of dirt. You need a certain kind of clay of a certain consistency. So chauses would be that type of earth. Okay. Over Lavena, you can use a ground-up brick. Over Magufa, or you can use the stock.
Lavena doesn't have to be one.
No. It's called Lavena.
It's a brick, yeah.
I don't know if there's any relation between the word Lavena and Lava. Maybe not. I don't know. Over Magufa, or you can also do Kisya Adam with a cover with a lid of a jug, of an earthenware jug. Shakoshan, if you ground them up, the Shakoshan is referring to the last three things we mentioned, the Chausis, the Lavena, and the Magufa. If you ground them up, then you can use them for Kisya Adam. Aval ein machasin le zevel agas, but you can't do Kisya Adam with coarse dung, larger pieces, or veloy b'choil agas, or with coarse sand. Or with a brick or stopper of an earthenware jar that you didn't grind up, if there's still a solid piece, in other words. And you can't just cover it with a keli and consider that covered. It has to be covered with something not permanently per se, but it has to be covered with something powdery, basically, we're saying. But not necessarily, but okay, maybe. Klal Amr Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel said a general rule. Dover Shemagalba by Smachim Machatin by. You can do Kisya Adam with something in which plants will grow. V'she'en Magalba Smachim Ein Machatin by. If plants won't grow in it, then you can't use it for Kisya Adam. So that's why, for example, you can't use a brick. Plants won't grow in a brick, let's say. If you grind it up.
Salt you cannot.
What?
Salt.
Salt. No, you can't use salt. No.
Fine dung. Plants grow on fine.
Yeah, because it's like fertilizer, yeah. But first of all, Tosfos points out, let's say, for example, this chausis, if we assume that chausis is ground up earthenware or ground up bricks or what have you, then you have a Gemara also in Bava Kamma that mentions plants. You don't get hana from chausis, those plants don't grow in it. So what are we saying over here? That Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying that only if plants grow in it. So Tosfos explains actually what it is that plants will grow in it, but you're not going to get very much yield. You might have an area covered with chausis and plant, let's say, a pound of seeds in it, and you're going to get out, the yield is going to be a pound of grain. You're not going to get more than what you put in, unlike when you plant in regular, in normal soil. But at least it will grow. With that said, you have the Rishonim who discussed that when we say over here Magabar by Smachim, doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be fertile enough that if we put seeds in it that they'll sprout. It can mean that you take an existing plant and replant it in there like potting soil and water it, and it'll at least stay alive. It may not flourish, but it'll at least stay alive in that medium. Then it's considered, yeah. So the Gemara starts off. Hechi dami choil hadak. What is the definition for this purpose of fine sand? How fine is fine? If it's fine enough that a potter who's going to be using it for making pottery doesn't have to grind it up further, then it's considered fine sand, and you can use it for and the pashtus, I guess the same thing with zevel, and then you can use it for kisya adam.
Why don't we just say it's fine sand, like regular sand?
Because that's what we have to define. How fine is fine? How large are the grains? Okay, well, that's it. The ikka demasmila sefer. Others learned the statement of Rabbi Baba Chana as referring to the Sefer, that we said, Aval ein machasin loy bezevel agas loy bechol agas, where the Mishnah continues, you cannot do kisya adam with coarse dung or with coarse sand. So there the question would be, hey, you could ask the other way around, hey, dummy chol agas, how coarse is coarse? And there, the second version is, if it's so coarse, if the pieces are so large, that to make anything useful out of it, you would have to grind it up. So the question is, my benai, so what's that practical difference between the two versions? The answer is, ikka benai, it's sorich v'loy sorich, where you kind of need to, but you don't really need to. Demifrach ifruchi, namely, if it's large chunks, but they break down easily. You don't really need to grind them up. They're like sandstone or whatever, where it easily breaks apart. So according to the first Lashon, it would be considered Chol Adak, because the fact is you don't have to look out straight because it comes apart on its own. According to the second version, it would still be considered Chol Adak, because the fact is Torech Lakoistro, you do have to do something to it. You may not have to actually put it in a grindstone or whatever, but you still have to break it apart in order to do something useful with it. So that's how So Rashi learns, in other words, the first Lashon would be more Makel in that case, and the second Lashon would be more Machmir. The Rif actually learns the other way around, that the Rif apparently learns the other way around, because he only brings the first Lashon, implying, therefore, that he says that the first Lashon, it's just the opposite. The first one is the one that's Machmir, and to say that if it's something that Mifrech is Fruchi, that it easily breaks apart, then it would be considered, it would not be suitable, whereas according to the second Lashon, it is suitable. And so, and the Rosh Paskins, according to the Rif, like that, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So if you have, they're chunks that easily break apart, then they're no good unless you actually break them down.
The question is, there's a different Kirsa of the Mishnah that says instead of Hadas, or...
The first part of the Mishnah mentioned Hadas, the second part mentioned Hagas. Look in the Mishnah, the second line of the Mishnah mentions Hadas, the fifth line mentions, the fourth line mentions Hagas.
Okay.
Yeah. So the question is, which is the more, in other words, when we say Dak, does it mean Dafka Dak, and therefore if it doesn't meet the criteria of Dak, then automatically it's excluded, or the other way around, is it that only if it meets the criteria of gas is it excluded, but if it's not all the way there yet, then. So like it's in between, basically, that's what we're saying.
All right.
Okay. Turn it up on him. We learn in a bright, so let's talk more about these dinim. Drichi sohu, the pasuk says you should cover it, the blood. Yacho yichasenu ba'avonim, so if you just had the word b'chi sohu, you would think it means you could cover it with rocks.
With anything.
A yich ba'al of a sakli, or you could overturn a keli on it. Talmud loyma be'offer. No, therefore the pasuk continues with dust. The ainli ela offer. Now, though, based on that, you would only know that you can use davka dust. Minayin l'rabat zevel adak v'chol adak. The fine dung or the fine sand, or shchikas avonim, or grindings or ground up stones, or shchikas charsis, or ground up charsis, according to any of the definitions of charsis that we said, or ne'oras tishdan daka, or fine combings of flax, when you have flax after you remove the stalks, after you get the fibers out of the stalks, you have bits and pieces of stalk among them and other such things, and you have to comb them out. And that stuff that you comb out, if it's of fine consistency, then it's also it's like dust in that sense, and you can use it.
No one mentioned so far. I should say what we use wood powder.
Right, that's the first thing on the next one. Unasodas shocharoshin daka, also fine sawdust, the sid and lime. The charsis leveno magufa shakastron, or the charsis that you get from grinding up a brick or the cover of a barrel that you ground up. How do you know all of those are good for kisi adam? Talmud lomer v'chisahu. Therefore, after all, the prophet did mention did say v'chisahu, you should cover it. In other words, the point is, Rashi said, if it meant davka dust and nothing else, then the expression in the pasuk would have been uva ofo yichasenu, and with dust he should cover it. Then it would mean dab the dust, nothing else. V'chisohu, in and of itself, means you can cover it with other things. Then it says va'ofo, which means specifically offer. The Gemara is going to ask soon why it's not a kala prah. But the point is, the word v'chisohu can be used to say that there are other things that you can cover with other than actual offer.
But offer seems to be preferable.
Wait, no, not necessarily. Yochol shani marva zevel agas v'chol agas. You would think in that case maybe we can include also coarse dung or coarse sand or shchitas klei matzos or ground up metal kalim or leveno or magufa shaloi kashon or bricks or stoppers of barrels that you didn't grind up the kemach or flour the subin or more of a subin and bran. Subin or Mursan different residues from wheat that you get after grinding it up. Subin actually is the shells that are on the outside of the kernel, and then Mursan is the bran that you have inside the kernel. Anyway, the point is, how do we know you can't do kisi adam with any of those things? Talmud lema ba'ofer. Well, after all, the pasuk does mention ba'ofer. So now the question is, Amara Isla Rabbis.
Using the offer for some
That's the point. Umara isa the rabbit of elu lahotias elu. So you're going to ask, well, then why? What's the logic? Once we're saying ba'ofa, why are we including some things based on b'chisahu and excluding other things based on ba'ofa? The reason is acha shiriba akosav umiyot. Look, we have a ribui in the pasuk. The word b'chisahu implies you can cover with anything. The word ba'ofa is a miyot, meaning only with dust. Therefore, we have to say it's a logical thing. We're going to include, therefore, let's say, the sawdust and the ground-up bricks, et cetera, which are...
That's min offer. It says offer.
Fine. They are min offer. They're a type of dust.
Okay.
Therefore, we're going to exclude coarse dung and flour and bricks, et cetera, she'en min offer, because they're not a type of offer. Okay. So now the question becomes, why don't we say ema b'chisohu klal offer prat? Why don't we say then that the word is that the word? By the way, Tosfos actually points out, as far as this, we mentioned in the list of things you can't use, we mentioned ground up metal kalim. Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that implies that such thing that plants will grow in such a medium.
In scrap,
but ground up. It's ground up to a powder. So that's it. And the answer is, Tosfos says, if you burn it, like for example, the eagle was burnt and then ground up, then yes, plants will grow. And here we're talking about grinding it up without burning it first. So then plants won't grow. Then plants won't grow in it. Yeah, because when you burn it, then you change the chemical. Yeah, you change the chemical composition. It gets combined with carbon or whatever, and therefore, yeah. Okay. Fine. So the question is, ema b'chisohu klal offer prat. Maybe you should say the word b'chisohu is klal, and the word offer is a prat. The rule then would be, as usual, klal of prat, ein b'chlal elamash of prat. The klal is limited only to the prat, only to the specific thing mentioned. Offer ein midyachwin aloy.
We're saying ema because we cannot say
the We're asking. You just said that you have a ribuy and a miut, and therefore we're including anything that would be in the category of offer. Why don't you say it's a klal of prat? Right. And then you would have to say offer ein midyachrin aloy. Then it would mean only offer, nothing else. The answer is omer amoni mishum to have a klal hatzorich leprat. Yes, but in this case, it's not a regular klal of prat because it's a klal that requires a prat. In other words, Rashi explains like this. And by the way, this is also one of the Yerushalmi midas. We say in morning davening, we have a klal of prat, klal of prat, yes, and then you have miklal shuutzorich leprat, or miprat shuutzorich leklal. So what does that mean? Here is an example of a klal of tzorich leprat. A classic klal of prat is, the klal tells you, the klal is clear on what it means. All it is you need to know, does it include everything in that category, or is it limited only to certain things in that category? That's where klal of prat or klal of prat or klal comes in. But then you can have something like we have over here, where the word the klal itself, without a prat to define it, you would completely misunderstand it. The word v'chisohu in and of itself, if you didn't have the word be'ofer, you would think it could mean you could cover it with anything, even like with a keli. Which covering something with a keli is a completely different kind of thing than burying it in dirt. So you wouldn't realize even that it means that you have to put over it something like dirt or something. So therefore, it's a klal shel tzorich leprat, and therefore we don't darshan it like that. Yet.
So it's not a klal leprat,
exactly. So it's a klal hatzorich leprat. Without the word ba'ofer, we would completely misunderstand the word b'chisohu altogether. We would think that it could mean any kind of covering, even the kind of covering that you do, for example, with a kazi.
Any klal leprat has to be tested to see if it's not.
It has to be. Would you be able to understand the klal? You have to. Would you be able to understand the klal without the prat? We will have in a couple of months, Bez Hashem, when we get to Masechta Bechoros, we will have a similar example. Actually, there we're going to have both a klal that requires a prat and a prat that requires a klal. We're going to have both halves of the rule over there in connection with a din involving Bechor. But here we have the one of them. Tosfos, by the way, disagrees with Rashi on that. Tosfos says that obviously we would know, obviously there's a big difference between covering something with a keli versus covering with dirt. No, Tosfos says if we only had the word b'chisohu and we didn't have the word b'offer, in particular, we wouldn't know the din that we learned at the beginning of the parak, that you have to have dirt below and above. The word b'chisohu by itself, fine, it might mean that you have to cover with dirt, even without the word b'offer, but we wouldn't know that there also has to be loose dirt underneath it. That's what the word, that's what we need to offer. So it is. Tosfos is not arguing with the Gemara. It is a klal tzarich l'prat. They're just understanding the tzarich l'prat differently than Rashi. Not that it means that you would have thought that the chisel means you could cover it with a keli. You would know it means you have to cover it with something like dirt, but you wouldn't realize that it means that you also have to have underneath. Okay. Anyway, the point is that therefore, so it's not a klal l'prat, but called klal tzarich l'prat. So when you have a klal that requires a prat in order to even clarify what it means, ain't done enough to be klal l'prat. Such a thing is not judged as a klal l'prat. Then we can judge it, as we said before, as a ribuy and mute. So therefore, we would say that we're including anything that can be in the general category of offer. We can, as we said before, that we do that. We said, we just said that we make a ribuy, therefore, that other things that are similar to offer can be included. For example, ground up bricks, etc. Things that are not similar to offer, for example, unground up bricks, cannot be included. That's a ribuy and mute, yeah.
So a cloud, sorry, for the product, has to be changed to a ribuy mute.
I don't know if it has to be. Maybe it's not darshan as anything at all. But the point is, it can be darshan as a ribuy mute. Okay. Dorish Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista. Ein mechassin ela b'davar shezorin bar matzmiach. So Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista says, you can only do kisi adam with something that if you plant seeds in it, they will grow. The Rashi explains that means as opposed to, for example, desert sand. Desert sand is salty. Plants don't grow in it. Therefore, the point is, in other words, that now in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel mentioned a similar concept, but he mentioned smachin gdelin bo, which implies, in other words, that, so first of all, Tosfos explains there's a couple of differences. First of all, when it says in the Mishnah, smachin gdelin bo, would imply that if plants grow in it on their own, then it's good enough. Even you might plant in it and it won't necessarily grow, but if you have plants that are able to grow and survive in it, then it would be good. He's telling you that no, it has to be shezorin bo masmiach, something that you can actually plant in it and it will grow. So that's a stricter definition. Also, Tosfos
has to be able to grow.
That's the point, that you have to actually be able to plant something in it and it will grow.
Not potential.
Right. Also, Tosfos says the other difference is that if we only had the Mishnah, you would say, for example, we said that you're allowed to do kisei adam with fine sand. So therefore, sand is sand. Doesn't matter whether it comes from a desert or not. Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista is telling us it can't be sand from a desert, where nothing is going to grow. Okay. So that was, well, wait. Omar Rava. So Rava says on this, Hai Burcha. This is nonsense. So Rashi says burcha is Malashan burus. It's an ignorant statement. Amalei of Nachmanis Chulava, my burcha say, why do you consider it to be so ignorant and so ridiculous? And Noam Ritan Yale, you should know, I told Rav Nachman Baruch Chista this din. Umehomas Nisa Ritan Yale, and actually it wasn't just my own idea. I told it to him based on the following braisa. Braisa says, Hoya Mahalach Bamidbar, if a person is traveling in the desert, now in the desert you have lots of sand all around, there should be no problem. But the Ein Loi offer Afer, it says over here, but really it's supposed to be offer, you don't have dirt, you don't have dust that you can use for Kisi Adam. So right there you see that the sand from the desert itself is no good for Kisi Adam. So what do? Shoichik dinner zahav machasa. You grind up a gold dinner and you can cover with it. The Gemara is going to explain soon that gold dust is considered offer for this purpose. Now, in fact, we had the point that Tosfos mentioned before, that if you burn it, then plants will grow in it. But if you don't, then not. But the Gemara is going to explain soon that gold dust is considered offer for this purpose, even if it wasn't burned. That's the point. Nevertheless, still, because the pasuk calls it offer, then it's still, in other words, the point is, Rishonim explained, it has to be something, in order for it to be used for kisei adam, it has to be one of two things. Either it's in the category of something which the Torah itself calls offer, which we're going to point to in a pasuk where gold is called that, or it has to be something that you can plant in it and it'll grow.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can do that. Or another example, if a person is traveling on a ship and he doesn't have dust to cover with, he can burn his talus and do kisei adam. And by the way, I think the ritva, not a talus. I mean, in other words, it's a piece of clothing in order to have ashes, because ashes are also valid for kisei adam. So again, plants will grow in them. And by the way, you have the Ritva says based on this, if you're not going to grind up the gold dinner or you're not going to burn the talus, then you can't shech the animal because you have a mitzvah of kisei adam and you can't,
But you have to know ahead of time?
You have to know ahead of time, yeah. You have to make sure to bring along some dirt or bring along a gold dinner and then do the mitzvah. Yeah, you see how important the mitzvah is that it's worth spending a gold dinner on, yeah.
But that's the same amen because that's...
Well, yeah, okay, because that's 10. Well, that's 10 zahubin. We didn't say how many zahubin. Okay, zahubin, maybe it's a dinner, I'm not sure yet. Okay, I mean, there is, I think, some discussion that says that if the bird, let's say, is worth less than a dinner, then not necessarily would you be obligated to, not necessarily are you expected to spend more on the mitzvah than the value of the object. Okay, anyway. So, Bishlam a third of Talit. So the point is, we see from that if a person is traveling in the desert, even though there's sand all over the place, he can't use that sand. That's the point. Therefore, we see that it has to be something that plants will grow in. So, Bishlam a third of Talit Zerah Mechasa. That's okay. I can understand how it is that he could burn a piece of clothing and use that for Kisi Adam. Fine. Ashlechon of Efer de Ikri Offer, because we do find in the Pasuk that ashes are called offer. Namely, the Pasuk mentions that you take Me'afar Sreif HaSachasa. The Gemara is going to quote that soon. That so you have a Pasuk that says that you should take from the dust of the burnt Paradroma and put that in. So therefore we see that ashes can be called dust, can be called offer. Right. El of dinner zahav menalon, but where are we getting the idea that you can use a ground up gold dinner? Amar of Zera, because you have a pasuk in Eo, v'afros zahav loy, and it has gold dust. It's talking about a rich place, it's talking about stone, whatever it is, that even the dust there is gold bearing. So you see that the pasuk calls gold offer, and therefore since the pasuk calls it offer, therefore it can be used for kisi adam. Interesting, the Rambam actually brings in this connection not only this pasuk of Va'afrit Zahav Lo, the Rambam also brings in this connection the pasuk about the eagle. Tosfos quotes it over here that Moshe says that I ground up the eagle Adasher Dach will offer until it was as fine as dust.
So actually,
Nosa Kalim and the Rambam asks. First of all, why did the Rambam have to bring two psukim? And also, why didn't the Gemara bring the pasuk from the Chumash? Why instead is it bringing the pasuk from Eos? So there's a few different answers. One of them being that in the case of the eagle, he had burnt it first. And again, we said before, burning, it wouldn't just apply to gold. It would apply to any metal that would work.
Like sand.
Yeah, well, not like desert sand, but we said, for example, if you take a silver or copper or iron or whatever, Kaylee, and then grind it up and burn it, then you could grow things in it. So therefore, that's why the Gemara specifically focuses on the pasuk from Ea, where there's no burning involved, and yet you can use the gold dust for Kisi Adam. The Mordechai brings actually in this connection, we'll stop over here, but an interesting side point, the Mordechai brings, one of the great Rishonim, brings an opinion from Gaonim that you can also use snow, because he quotes snow for Kisi Adam, because he quotes a pasuk also from Eov, Kila Sheleg Yomer Heve Oret, that Hashem tells the snow be on the ground, so implying also that there's a connection between the snow and the ground, and he said what?
It's melting.
Well, okay, but as long as it's not melted, then he says you can use it. He says also you can use iron. You can use ground up iron even if it's not burnt, because you have another pasuk also in Eov over there that mentions the barzel me'ofer yukach, that iron is taken from the dust, so also implying a connection between iron and dust. However, the Beit Yosef argues with that. He says the pasuk is saying Hashem tells the snow to be on the ground, not that the snow is ground. Besides, it doesn't use the word eretz over here; it uses the word offer. And the same thing with iron. Yeah, of course iron comes from the dust. Every metal is mined from the earth. Doesn't mean the iron is dust. Here, but after it's off, well, it's different. So he says it's a very nice day, but it's a daf yachid. Don't follow it.
What happens when the snow melts?
That's it. Well, then, because we said before, the same way we said you covered the Kisi Adam, you did the Kisi Adam with dirt, and later on the dirt blew away, no problem. You're not chayav to do Kisi Adam again. According to the Mordechai, if you used snow and later on the snow melted, it would be the same thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We said means sorta.
It's sorta?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, it's either because some of these things are allowed because they're called offer, and some of these things are allowed because plants grow in them, and therefore they have the practical status of offer.
Doesn't mean they're really offer.
Right. Okay. Good.